It's a new year, and a lot of Major League talent is still looking for a new home here as 2018 dawns. I'm Anthony Castrens. Thanks for tuning in to the Morning Lineup podcast for Tuesday, January 2nd, 2018. I'm here with Richard Justice. Richard, happy new year. It's 2018. That's still awkward because I'm still writing the year of the Astros on my checks. So,
where I live, we're going to be writing that for a long, long time. Even in 2020, we're going to be writing year of the Astros 2017.
Absolutely. Well, how long are we going to be talking about this hot stove season? That's my question. Is this hot stove season like run into May? Like what's the deal here? There's still a lot of work to be done. Since the last time, we had one of these chats, Wade Davis signed with the Rockies, but, really by and large, a really slow week. That last week of 2017 was a really slow one across Major League Baseball.
Yeah. We've gone over it all before, you know, the Ohtani Stanton thing slowed down things. Scott Boras, is a very methodical guy. Doesn't really, you know, if I had Scott represent me, I would say, Scott, I want 6 years at $180 million. Give the team a number and let's start negotiating. But that's not the way Scott operates, and that's not the way he asks his clients to operate. And the other part of that is when you can't get a number, sometimes you extend yourself to explore everything in the trade market. But let me ask you this. Who do you think's feeling the most pressure right now? The free agents, the Hosmers, the Moustakas, the Arrietas, or the teams like the Giants and the Cardinals and Brewers, Twins that haven't that still have work to do? Who do you think's feeling the most pressure to get something done?
I would say, like, generally speaking, and it's always going to be more player specific, but I think the players in general, and maybe not the guys you just mentioned, maybe not the upper, I mean, those guys are going to find a good, suitable place to land. I think we all expect that. But just the sheer wealth of free agents, I mean, guys start to get nervous. I think about a lot of guys on the cusp, you know, later in their careers or guys who are, you know, fourth outfield types and things of that nature. Because it just seems like generally teams are just willing to be patient right now. In many cases, they're willing to go with their young players. So it makes free agency just fascinating. And, you know, I know we're accustomed to the Scott Boras clients lingering, you know, into year, you know, many times. I think of Prince Fielder being a prominent one where, you know, Victor Martinez hurt his knee, and next thing you know, Prince Fielder's with the Tigers, and there's always, you know, potential for something like that to happen. But yeah, it obviously goes well beyond the Boras clients in this market. You know, you got some of those upper crust guys, but there's just a lot of guys who are probably feeling really antsy about now and would like to know, you know, where they're going to be in 6 or 7 weeks. They hope to be somewhere in 6 or 7 weeks.
Yeah, that's what we want people to know, is that players are creatures of habit. And right now it's January, and players want to know where they're going to be living in spring training, where the kids are going to be in school, apartment hunting. Players really like some certainty. And I have this theory, and I don't know if it's – tell me I'm wrong here, that I think I can see the market. I can still see the market for Darvish, for Arrieta, for Alex Cobb, Lance Lynn. I mean, we can name six teams. I think they're going to get – I don't think the market has changed much for them. But I'm starting to have problems fitting in Hosmer, Moustakas, J.D. Martinez, some guys like that. I don't know. Is Eric Hosmer going to – does he have options outside of the Padres? Does J.D. Martinez have options outside of the Giants? Unless maybe he wants to DH in Boston. And just knowing the guy a little bit, I mean, I don't think he wanted DH, but money could lure him to DHing. What do you think in the pitcher versus hitter demand?
Yeah, I think teams are a little more flexible when it comes to pitching, right? I mean, like, I'm just throwing this out there, but like, you think about Jake Arrieta and the Nationals possibility, and there's a team that doesn't have a glaring need in the rotation, but you know, if you can add pitching, you do it. And if you can add that depth, you want it. On the position player side, it's a little trickier. I think we went in the winter saying that obviously, you know, the market came down for power last year substantially, and you wondered how that would impact JD Martinez this winter. I don't know what that is, what that impact is yet. You know, until he actually signs the dotted line, we know what the number is. You know, it's hard to say, but obviously it's not the clear demand it would have been maybe in years past for that pure power. It's the sheer number of teams involved and the, you know, the amount of money teams are willing to pay for power has dropped. So, you know, for me, all those guys had fairly limited markets to begin with.
Sure.
The Backus market was limited. The Hosmer market was limited. The Martinez market was limited. And it's even more limited now. I mean, you look at Moustakas in particular, third base market was really solved. You know, I mean, Zach Cozart became part of the third base market for all intents and purposes. So that didn't help him any. So things are, you know, things are still going to take shape here. And I think we threw out the possibility of either of those guys, Moustakas or Hosmer, going back to the Royals. You know, we threw that out at the beginning of the offseason, and maybe that still happens for one or both of those guys. But yeah, it's pretty thin. I think we all expected that JD Martinez would be with the Red Sox after Stanton signed or was traded to the Yankees, but that is yet to transpire. And as you said, the DH factor is a big one there. So a lot of balls in the air. It's kind of fascinating. It's kind of fun because it just kind of extends these conversations into what used to be a really dead month in baseball, the month of January and the early part of February. And it's kind of evolving to the point where this is the meat of the offseason anymore.
Right.
But I'm going to throw your original question back at you. You know, what's the team or teams that are kind of, you know, the most work to be done here in the next, as we said, 6 or 7 weeks?
You know, you and I both, we admire the San Francisco Giants. I mean, we admire Buster Posey and Bumgarner and all that they've done there. But I'm having I'm looking at their roster, and they're still going to – can you spend your way out of what they found themselves in last year? And even if you can spend your way out of it, that means you put this Duggar kid in center field, you put JD in left field, you've now got Evan Longoria to play third. I'm thinking they need another pitcher. And even if they do all those things, now they're well over $200 million, and they need a bounce-back year from Bumgarner, Cueto, and Samardzija. They need a bounce-back year from Brandon Belt. You know, that's the team that I would think, you know, and we all know the Cardinals still want to get a closer. I think the Yankees would like to get a pitcher. I mean, I just think the Yankees are going to trade for Gerrit Cole. There's too many moving parts on both sides not to get this done. The Yankees can take pieces out and put pieces back in and still make the trade appealing to the Pirates. And also, when the Pirates have gone, you know Neil Huntington well, they've gone down this road a long way with having trade discussions for Gerrit Cole. Now do you call him up and say, you know, on second thought, we're bringing you back. Go get him, kid.
Well, I mean, possibly. I don't know. From everything I was hearing around the time of the winter meetings, it seemed not a foregone conclusion, but there was pretty strong sentiment that the Pirates would probably sell off some pieces here before long this winter. It's just that you're talking about a very very methodical front office, you know, led by Neil Huntington, as you said. And that's what you're seeing.
And likewise, the Yankees too. You know,
yeah,
they,
no doubt.
They're going to. Seems like they're determined. We're going to make this deal. We're going to make this deal, but we're going to make this deal on our own terms, and that means we may have Gleyber Torres on our opening day roster. So you're not getting him.
Yeah, it's tough for the Pirates because you know they were a 75 win team last year, and obviously a lot of things went wrong there. And you're counting on maybe too much to go right in the new year. So I think there's, as much as it is painful to move a Cole, to move a McCutcheon, and Cole has far more trade value than McCutcheon, let's be clear about that. McCutcheon going his free agent year. But I don't know. It feels like time to kind of turn the page there and, you know, think about, because that's obviously a franchise that always has to be thinking about, you know, long-term control and maximizing the value of its assets. And but having said that, I don't know, can you maximize the value of Gerrit Cole this winter? He's a guy who just hasn't added up to some of his parts just yet. A tremendous amount of upside there, but you know, maybe there's an argument for taking both those guys into the season and then maybe they build up their trade value for mid-year and there's more desperation in the marketplace. But this is what I'm talking about. I mean, we're talking here the first week of January, and that's a major pivot point for a franchise that has just yet to occur. And usually this is the kind of thing where a direction is pretty clear by, you know, November, December, to be going into the new year and for a franchise to potentially sell off, you know, two of its biggest pieces. And oh, by the way, the Rays and Chris Archer, you know, they already traded Evan Longoria to the Giants, as you mentioned. And, you know, Chris Archer is very much a trade candidate right now. So these are some really big, big picture discussions, decisions that are going to be made in the coming weeks. And, you know, it's hard to say which way it all goes.
Yeah, you know, if I'm running the Rays and or the Pirates, like I want to get on with it. I don't want to play the market out. I don't want to bring Chris Archer back and have the same question every day. And not just us asking him, but he's going to be asking himself. You know, a guy like that is a very smart guy, very thoughtful guy. Play, you know, we were talking players like some certainty. I would just say, okay, this is what I'm going to get for him. The Rays seem to have a they seem to be in the mode of, okay, we got what we were comfortable getting for Evan Longoria, while we probably intend to trade maybe Odorizzi, Archer, and Colome. It has to be a certain price. And we've seen Andrew Friedman in years when he just wouldn't make a deal. But I would think you want as many, if you're going to go with kids, you want those kids to come in, you start selling them, you know, you want them to get comfortable, you get to know them and all of that. It's, we're in a weird spot right now in baseball, you know, in terms of the offseason. It's an interesting market. And I think, you know, you and I have said this for a month. All hell's going to break loose at some point.
Yeah, I mean,
and it hasn't happened yet.
No, but not all of these things are going to happen. But yeah, this month, in this month of January 2018, you could conceivably have a Gerrit Cole trade, a Chris Archer trade, a Manny Machado trade, Jake Arrieta, Yu Darvish finding a home, J.D. Martinez finding a home. A lot of heavy lifting we have to take place.
I want to ask you about Eric Hosmer. The one thing seems to be that the Padres have some interest in him. Does that make sense for you, given that Will Myers would have to go, I assume, would have to go back to the outfield?
No, it makes no sense to me whatsoever, which means it'll probably happen. But you're talking about a team with one identifiable player, and that's the player who would change positions as a result.
And you don't want to put him in a position where he's not comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, he could probably acquit himself. I mean, we've seen him out there in the past. I think with enough work, he could acquit himself. But no, I mean, the move to first base, generally speaking, was good for him. And obviously, the price point on Hosmer, whatever it happens to be, it's going to be a high, you know, it'll be the high bar within that franchise. It's obviously a low payroll situation there right now. So, and we've seen, obviously, there's instances of the past of a team in a sort of rebuild, you know, not clear contention mode, you know, going for it with a guy that they could view as a signature piece moving forward, but and being aggressive with it. But, you know, I don't know what the success rate is that with that. The Padres still strike me as, you know, a couple years away. So it's a weird one. He is a young free agent. There's no doubt about it. And you never know. You never know this time of year in the off season, just what stuff is legitimate, what stuff is being floated for the good of the player and his brand and his value. I'm not sure, but I don't know. I went in the winter saying like the one scenario there that strikes me, Hosmer is young enough that he could still fit within, you know, the context of Kansas City's long-term picture. And, you know, that's a team that might end up bidding with its heart as much as its head. And so I don't totally rule that one out. But yeah, when the Red Sox brought back Mitch Moreland, it obviously changed things considerably. Just looking at things from the outside, you know, it changed things considerably for Eric Hosmer's market.
You know, I'm wondering if this is the new normal in that some of the teams that are being patient, Tampa Bay, you know, we've seen it in the past with the Dodgers, with the Astros, with the Cubs. The Milwaukee comes to mind. Milwaukee may be first on the list. These teams with these youngish, data-driven, value-driven general managers, and they're just, you know, a lot of what has driven the offseason in the past is emotion. You know, I got to make a move. I got to sell season tickets. I got to do this. I got to send my fans a message that I'm doing something. And I guess beginning with Billy Beane or maybe even more Andrew Friedman, it's just, no, we'd rather make no deal than a bad deal. Yeah. And history shows that some of these $100 million contracts don't pay off. I'm just wondering if that's what some of the weight is that while David Stearns wants a starting pitcher, he's not comfortable with the market for Arrieta and for Yu Darvish and Alex Cobb. And he just, I'm not going to do anything if I have to do something that stretches me to the point I'm not comfortable. What about my crazy theory?
No, I mean, you're absolutely honest on analytics takes a lot of the emotion out of the equation. You know, until the owner calls down and says, "Hey, get this guy," or, but, because that does happen.
And that's why Scott Boras calls the owner. I'm going to sell you. When I get through with you, you're going to be begging me to send you to Jake Arrieta's.
Well, but I mean, you're absolutely onto something though about the way that the mindset shifts and, you know, the valuation of assets. And that's why I'm looking at what the Rockies are doing this offseason too, is an extension of that. And, you know, where teams are willing to take chances or invest. And that's a really interesting situation to me in Colorado, is obviously, you know, that's a team that has struggled to attract starting pitching in particular over the years, unless you're Mike Hampton and you love the school system there in Denver. But
okay.
You know, it's just a tough sell. It always has been. But they're really amplifying the bullpen. And this Wade Davis contract that happened since we last spoke, a 3-year deal there, or, you know, historic deal there for a closer.
On top of two others, Jake McGee,
exactly. bringing back Jake McGee and bringing in Brian Shaw on the 3-year deal. That's what I was referencing, 3-year deal. But what do you think of that tact? You know, how much ground have they made up on the Dodgers? It seems to fit two things. The one I just mentioned, you know, the struggle to attract starting pitching there. And two, it seems to fit this, you know, new mindset of build from the back forward when it comes to your pitching staff, you know, really beef up the bullpen. They obviously have a burgeoning young starting staff there, and they're basically leaving that untouched and really going after the pen hard.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, I was doing a story on the genius of Dayton Moore putting together, winning a championship in part on a team based on the world's greatest bullpen, to have three closers at the end of the game. And you know, I'm what I want to write is, you are smart, you've changed the game and all that. And he kind of nudges me and goes, you do know that's all we could afford. like Colorado has gone out and committed less than $100 million, I think, on those three relievers. That gets you a starting pitcher in this market. And they just decided we'd like to have all those innings after the fifth inning taken care of. That's the Kansas City model. And it made sense economically. And as it turns out, you know, it's really changed the way teams are constructed. Colorado had a year when they always knew they were going to have to develop their own pitchers. At some point, they were going to have to get guys. I was talking to Buddy Black at the winter meetings. One of the things he said, you got to tell them, you got to throw sliders, you got to throw curveballs, all that stuff about you can't do this, you can't do that, Coors Field. You can't give up four runs in the first inning. Well, you have to throw your normal repertoire, and you have to be prepared to give up four runs in the first inning and just keep competing. And those pitchers grew up last year. And I think the way Jeff Brightish looked at it is, hey, we're going to score runs. We have a deep rotation, young guys, power arms. And now if we give Buddy a big time bullpen, basically three closers to go along with the guys, that they already had, we got a chance to win. And he said last week or 2 weeks ago, he said, I think we got a team good enough to win a World Series. And that's what you want to say. But, you know, I don't know. Have they made up 17 games on the Dodgers? No, but they've certainly positioned themselves that you say, okay, that's a team that's got a great chance to play in a while in October. Because if you give Bud Black a lead after five innings, he's going to bring it home, I would think.
Yeah, so the Rockies resolve to have one of the majors' best bullpens in 2018. And let's stick with this theme of resolutions, Richard. It's that time of year. First of all, have you made any New Year's resolutions personally for 2018?
I want to do a better podcast, honestly.
Better than this one in particular, or just a...
Yeah, and my serious one is when I go back, I don't know if you do this, you go back through interviews and a guy's in the middle of a good answer and I interrupt the guy and I go, just like, it just drives me crazy. You know, and somebody says, who are you annoyed with, him? I said, no, me. That's the worst part of it.
Yeah.
I have no New Year's resolutions. They don't last till the second.
They don't last. The most successful New Year's resolutions are the ones you don't make. The best trades are the ones you don't make. So, all right. So let's get into some baseball resolutions here. You wrote some for MLB.com. We mentioned the Rockies.
As you did, too.
I did too. Yeah. It's, you know, we should resolve to come up with less obvious hokey column hooks in 2018. But for now, this is the best we have to work with.
So, yeah, right. All right. Like we said, it's a slow off season. Give us a break.
We do what we can. All right, so I think, and I think we both wrote about this, the Washington Nationals, they strike me as, you know, the urgency award winner for 2018. There's other situations that are very urgent, I'm here in Cleveland. I think the Indians situation is always urgent. The longest championship drought in the game, small market team in a win now window. I think the Mariners now with the Buffalo Bills going to the playoffs have the longest active drought in American professional sports, longest, you know, playoff postseason drought. So that's an urgent situation. But the Nationals, of course, Bryce Harper entering his free agent year. I mean, that's as big an X factor as you could hope to envision. So you think they'll have that breakthrough season this year?
I just have to believe, you know. I mean, since – well, people have to understand that since Bryce Harper was called up in 2012, the Nationals have won more games than any team in baseball. Well, I think it's 559 to 555. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers have won four more, but that was before Bryce got called up. They just haven't won in October. They haven't won a postseason series. And I always love talking to Mike Rizzo about it. He says, here's what you do. You don't build a team to win a World Series. You build a team to win 85 and 95, and you get into the postseason. And there is some of a bit of a crapshoot, you know, part of it. And he said the other thing is when you don't win, you just look at the core of your team. You try to analyze it objectively. You get yourself back up and you go play again. I just have to think. I don't know how you feel about it. I have to think, like, when if you could, the quality of the team they got, they're going to break through. And obviously, if they don't break through this year with what do they got? One more year of Bryce Harper, one more year of Daniel Murphy, and their team will be different on opening day in 2019. This is it. I just think they have to do it at some point. Now, if you look at them in the landscape of, hey, the Cubs are pretty good. The Dodgers, we just talked about the Rockies. I think the Diamondbacks have a chance. You know, it's not easy, but that, you know, that's why I'm, that's why it's October is different.
It is. And I'll be curious. The Nationals could basically do nothing the rest of the offseason and their roster would be pretty well set. But, sure. You know, I think we all have in the back of my minds, you know, the Max Scherzer precedent in particular sticks out to me. Is there was a time where, hey, they were set in the rotation and they went out and signed Max Scherzer anyway. So I don't put it past them to, I know it's been floated about them and Jake Arrieta and the relationship with Scott Boras, between ownership and Scott Boras in the past. So that's a strong thing. Greg Holland, you know, the super bullpen idea has kind of been rumored a little bit there in Washington. They obviously made great strides to improve their bullpen midseason in 2017, but you know, maybe they could bring in Greg Holland and really beef that thing up. And then I've had a couple people, when I ask about JD Martinez, I've had a couple people say they view the Nationals as the wild card there just because of Bryce Harper's looming free agency. And hey, maybe they'd go out and add JD Martinez and reconfigure the outfield and, you know, have a backup plan basically should Bryce Harper bolt in the year. I don't know if I buy that one, but a couple people from, you know, a couple people whose opinions I respect from a couple different teams just said that was kind of in the back of their mind. So yeah, the Nationals will be fascinating in these coming weeks. They'll be fascinating in 2018 in general. Big season of high hopes to, of course, not just get past the division series round, but go all the way here in 2018 in the district. How about Mike Trout? Talk about a guy who, you know, you talk about a team that can't break through when it comes to getting out of the division series. Mike Trout would love to see the division series again. Of course, one and done back in 2014. The Angels were swept by the Royals, and that's the only time we've seen Mike Trout on the postseason stage. What do you think, Richard? This is the year he gets back?
I hope so. And I just, you know why? I just want people to know what a great player he is. He's the one guy that I take people to games when he's in Houston. And I say, like, you know, if they're not real baseball fans, I'll say, now they have the best player on the planet. One of the maybe 10 best players of all time. Before this night's over, you'll know. And Castro, it's amazing when you just go as a fan and watch the guy. The guy does something to impact winning every night. He makes a play on the bases, a play in the outfield, and there's just a way he goes about his business. I just think October, he needs an October stage for the whole world to say, holy smoke, this guy deserves to be in the conversation with any player. I mean, what that guy has done in his career in 6 years is pretty incredible. That, you know, if I had a New Year's resolution and I could implement it, that would be it. Mike Trout in October. Trout in 2018 in October.
Well, Billy Epler's trying to make that happen for you. Obviously, he's been one of the more active in a slow offseason overall across the major league landscape. The Angels have been one of the more active teams. They will be one of those quote-unquote winter winners, you know, for good or bad. We know how that can turn out sometimes, but I thought they had a really strong season, all things considered, you know, losing Trout for whatever it was, 6 or 7 weeks, injuries in their rotation left and right, and still managed to finish the game under 500. So you're building onto a decent nucleus there with, you know, Zach Cozart over at third, Ian Kinsler at second, and of course our man Shohei Ohtani, you know, potentially putting on a show out there in Anaheim. So they'll be interesting. A lot of questions in that rotation, Ohtani being one of them. You know, Garrett Richards, Matt Shoemaker, Tyler Skaggs, Andrew Haney, you promised me health for all of those guys. And, you know, it's hard not to be excited about the Angels, but obviously trying to close the gap on Houston. And speaking of, you think the Astros maintain their magic in 2018? What do you expect for the Astros in that, you know, the potential World Series hangover year?
You know, what you and I and every baseball fan saw was a certain something that everybody commented on. Whether you watched them in the ballpark, you watched them on TV, there was an emotion in the dugout. There was an aggressiveness, a fearlessness to them. And some of that, I think, is being young, still trying to prove yourself and sort of riding the wave. You know, you don't know what you don't know. I hope that's the thing they never lose. And I think with a guy like Springer, who just loves to play, loves to, you know, he's 110 miles an hour every game. I think Correa and Altuve are like that. I think you got a chance. You know, it's never the same. They could win three more in a row, and it wouldn't be the same as the first one. But I hope that tone, that style that they had, I hope that's the thing. That would be my resolution for them. Don't lose that part of it, this the way you go about things. And, you know, I don't think the Royals ever lost it. They lost some talent along the way, you know, but that whole thing of having each other's back, come up together in the minor leagues, you know, it sometimes doesn't result in wins and losses, but it's there and you can feel it. I want to ask you about one of your resolutions. Embrace the pitch clock. To me, you have to have it. It's the game has to have a faster pace. And we understand all the things. The reason the catcher goes to the mound 50 times a game now is there's paranoia about who's spying, who's stealing signals and all of that. But we got to have a quicker pace to the game. The commissioner has said there's going to be a quicker pace to the game. We're not even talking about game times as much as a quicker pace. Can you see players, the Verlanders, the David Prices, can you see them embracing?
No, I mean, I see them adjusting to it because they're probably going to have to. I do think it'll be a reality this year. I can't say that with 100% certainty, but I think it's a pretty strong likelihood that it'll be implemented this year. And maybe I don't know what wiggle room there is to get it off of 20 seconds. It's been 20, just for those who aren't aware, it's been 20 seconds at the AA and AAA level the last 3 years. And, you know, as I wrote, I mean, nobody's passed away from increased hustle. It hasn't happened. So that's a good thing. That's a good starting point. And then, of course, all the players who have come through AA, AAA the last few years, you know, they've been somewhat,
And you see it. You see it when they come to the big leagues. You see the pitchers working at a little bit better tempo. And guys who are in the Gulf Scouts and stuff, so forth, that are in the fall league say the pitch clock disappears quickly, that the game is just played at a little better tempo.
Yeah, I think it's one of those where, for us as fans and writers and whatnot, I think you'll get used to it pretty quick. Everybody kind of romanticizes baseball without a clock, but I think that's a bunch of hooey. I think that, you know, you got to adjust with the times or you got to adjust to what the game is showing you and telling you. And last year, you know, Fangraphs has a stat on pace, and I think it was 23.5 seconds between pitches was the average last year. And there's offenders on both sides, of course, when it comes to that. There's the batter stepping out of the box. And, sure, you know, the year before last, 2016, there was a strong effort by the league early in the year to address pace and to make guys stay in the box and all that stuff. And it was enforced pretty well for, you know, a couple months there. And then very quickly they got away from it. So, you know, so that to me was kind of the final straw where, yeah, put a clock on these guys. Let's make it official. And, you know, once it's there, everybody, the audience will get used to it pretty quick. As for the players, and you mentioned, you know, two of the more senior members of the game, Verlander in particular, one of the more senior, you know, pitchers and foremost pitchers of our time. Yeah, huge adjustment, no question about it. But I just think it's a necessary change for the good of the game. And again, I think you have a generation of players maybe a little more accustomed to it, and the older guys can just kind of deal with it because – in some ways they've dug this hole, you know? And there's other ways the game could speed up, no doubt about it. You can limit mound visits, all these things. But, and as you said, Richard, it's not so much about strict game time. It's just about the pace. It's just about the dead time and eliminating some of that dead time. So, I think you can make all kinds of puns about it's past time for a clock, but whatever.
Yeah. And the thing is, I know the commissioner has the power to unilaterally do it, right. What he would like to do. And I think maybe what led to, I think the umpires got worn down from trying to enforce it when guys kept stepping out. I mean, there are only so many times in a game you can say, hey, get back in the box, you know, or hey, throw the ball, all that, get back on the mound, all that. I think what the commissioner is hoping, what Dan Hallam is hoping is, let's get everybody on the same page. Let's understand that this is good for the game, and this is what we need to do. And that's probably why nothing has been announced yet. The commissioner would like it to everybody go forward in lockstep. And because if you don't, then you got a real, you know, if David Price doesn't want to throw the ball, that's you just want everybody, you want it to happen, and you want it to happen in the right
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to practice what we preach here, Richard, and I'm going to, you know, put the clock on us. I'm going to say we've gone overtime here and call it a wrap for our first podcast of 2018. This is the year, folks. We are going to improve our podcasting abilities day by day, and you will be there every step of the way, I hope. Thanks for tuning in. My thanks to Richard Justice, and we'll talk to you soon.